Welcome to the Lean Commerce Podcast, the show that sheds light on hidden levers that can help you 10x your business. Join us as we talk to experts and find out the 1% improvements that you can apply right now to take you there.
Hey, everybody. We're here today with Megan Litchfield. She is the founder of Red Thread, which is one of the coolest integrations of personalized shopping that I have come across. I was gushing before we got on air, and I don't get excited about tech very often, but this is probably one of those rare exceptions. Megan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So to kick things off, can you tell us a little bit about what Red Thread is? And I alluded to that whole personalized shopping idea, but you can explain it a lot better.
Yeah. So Red Thread, we are an apparel brand for all women, and we are the first apparel brand to ditch standard sizes once and for all. And we create custom fit clothing for women of every shape, and we deliver it to her door in a week. And the way we do it is she takes a few selfies of herself, and we pull all of her measurements. We create her own design, and then we build it for her in South San Francisco and ship it straight to her door.
Let me just make sure I get that. They take a few pictures, and then you guys are going to, do you have standard patterns that you use based off of the initial image that you see that are mapping kind of key proportions, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we have hundreds of patterns. And so we use basically all of the points that we get from the 3D body model and all of the measurements, which are accurate measurements. And we match them to the closest pattern we have, and then we make adjustments to it. So that's how we're able to do it so quickly. However, every single piece we make is one of a kind. And so far, of all the orders we've shipped and all the happy customers, no two pieces have actually been the same in terms of their specification. You know, the waist width, the length, the inseam, the thigh width, it's all been different for every single woman, which only supports our hypothesis that women are all unique and that sizing just doesn't work for us because we're not standard.
And how many women have tried it out?
Well, we don't really share kind of broad sales numbers. We've been around for 5 months, and actually we did a big beta before we launched with over 100 women. When we did the beta with 100 women, no two were the same then, and everyone really loved their products. And that was after a year of development, and we knew we were onto something big. We've shipped all over the world, all over the country, and women are just loving finally having clothing that just fits them the first time.
That's exciting. So how did you get here professionally? I know you have a lot of e-commerce experience, but it'd be great to hear how you really started this journey.
Yeah, so my background is, you know, sort of more bigger company or startups. So I worked in retail at The Gap for many years, where we spent a lot of time trying to figure out the fit problem. Of course, the way we did it is we took one model in and fit it to her and then scaled it up and down, which doesn't work. I spent a little bit of time more recently at GoPro, where I was doing e-commerce and digital for that brand, you know, very, very powerful brand. I guess what I'm doing right now is really a combination of everything I've done in my career. I started out at Deloitte doing strategy consulting and analytics. Really, this all started, I would say, 4 years ago after I had my second kid, and I just could not find clothing that fit me. And, you know, it was always like too baggy here, too loose here, too long, too short. So I started asking my friends, you know, where do you guys buy your clothes? Like now that we're kind of a little bit older, and no one had really figured it out. So our choices were basically these like really tight leggings, which by the way, I don't love running around in tight leggings anymore, or these really baggy kind of give up sweatpants or denim. You know, there wasn't like a great pant option that really fit well. And that was really it for me. And I spent 2 years thinking about it, talking to people about it, trying to see if this was really a problem for people. And then I looked at the data. Fit is the number one issue for people not buying. It's the number one issue for returns. So I knew there was a big problem to solve here. And I finally got the courage to leave GoPro and quit my day job about 18 months ago and started Red Thread. And I started it with the mission to solve fit for all women. I really had no idea how we would solve it. That was the mission, was to kind of create a brand, that an inclusive brand that includes all women, gets rid of the stigma around size and shape, and really embraces us for who we are and makes product that fits us all.
So you have a lot of strategy background, a lot of marketing background. How did you approach the tech side? Because this doesn't seem like a simple thing at all.
You know, I was lucky to be exposed to tech, obviously, at GoPro and at the other e-commerce companies. And I really started, what I love about technology is how it scales, right? Like, people have been creating custom fit clothing forever, right? That's actually how clothing used to be before sizes came around. You either made your own clothes, which, you know, my mom was a seamstress and made a lot of my clothes. Or if you were really wealthy, you know, you got it done by a tailor. And then in the 1940s, after the World War, like, they had this great idea to create these standard sizes, which, you know, none of us are standard. So if you look back at the data, it's a little bit ridiculous. And so I wanted to be able to create custom fit because that was the only way to get a great fit, but it had to be able to scale and it had to be able to be easy and something our woman could do, you know, late at night when she has her 17 minutes of free time. That was where the technology came in, was, well, how do we get the measurements and how do we get it to women quickly? Because it has to be easy and it has to be fast. And there's so much technology now, even more so than even just 2 years ago when I started, where you can literally take photos of yourself and get all of your body measurements. And there's back-end technology where we can create and customize a pattern very quickly that didn't used to exist. So what we've done is we've sort of blended the modern technology of scanning and creating patterns in order to create a garment and do it for lots and lots of women rather than just one-offs that a tailor or a seamstress could do.
Wow. So tailoring at scale, you're really solving logistics problems as well. Because, I mean, you know, I think the standardization idea comes from, hey, how can we get some economies of scale out of it? And how have you been able to overcome it?
Yeah, I mean, sizes were invented for that reason, to be able to mass produce clothes. It was actually started for the military. So how can we mass produce clothing that sort of fits? And, you know, I will tell you, the whole apparel industry is set up this way. The supply chain, the way fabric is bought, the way things are produced. We knocked on so many factory doors and had so many people tell us we were crazy and that there was no way that we could do this. Because the supply chain just isn't set up to do one-off clothing. It's set off to produce thousands and thousands of pieces of one size. And then, of course, the little known secret is about half of those get incinerated at some point because they don't sell. We see a future where, you know, everything is on demand. Everything is made to your personal measurements. Everything is a one-of-a-kind special piece that you really love. And then there's none of this extra waste that the apparel industry is famous for right now.
It sounds like there were a lot of challenges you guys had to really overcome to make it happen. But is there anything that really stands out? Like, man, this was just way harder than I thought it was going to be.
There were probably two things. I think the first one was really developing the product. I mean, you know, if you wanted to start, you know, a t-shirt company tomorrow, you could go to your local printer, buy a bunch of blanks, and you could really get it up in like 2 weeks. You know, no offense to anyone who runs a t-shirt company. You know, we all love t-shirts. But it's very simple, right? And every single thing we did was different, right? From the way we built the website to having this scanning technology that users were using. We design our clothing so that it can be easily tailored, which nobody has ever done before. And then we have the operational complications of actually creating one-off garments, keeping track of them. We had to build even our own inventory system because there isn't even one of those that exists for this type of product. So really that end-to-end user flow and journey from coming to our website, every single touch point to creating the garment, to designing it, it really was all, that entire flow. That was really, I think, the hardest part. And I think, you know, the second hardest part, I said two things, was all the testing we did on women. You know, like, we had 100 women, they were all over the country. We wanted to get all different shapes. And it was just a logistical thing of, you know, I actually personally traveled all over the country and delivered the garments so I could see how they looked. It was, you know, just really hard work to like come to a conclusion on what the conclusions were and what we were learning and how to make it better. So I would say those were really getting the product right and nailing that was the big heavy lifting.
So I guess, like, you know, the thing you had going for you is you at least didn't have to like invent the internet, but otherwise it was pretty involved to get the product to market.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was, you know, it's just something, whenever you do something that no one else has done, it's always difficult to pioneer a new space, but it's also exciting. And when you see the emails from our customers and even the looks on people's faces for the women who are in our beta, It's just incredible the difference it makes when you have a really, really personalized experience versus just a mass market thing that, you know, you're willing to kind of dispose of quickly.
Yeah, that makes total sense. So with the industry in general, how do you think Red Thread's really going to lead the charge, or what do you think is going to change as Red Thread scales?
I mean, I believe that the whole apparel industry will shift away from sizes and more to an on-demand model. I think it will take a while, though, because the industry is very antiquated and probably one of the few that it has not been disrupted in a long time. So my vision is that, you know, every apparel brand is, people have their measurements in their digital wallet. They're able to create on-demand apparel. The brands are able to support it. The retailers are able to support it. And, you know, probably at some point after that, people will have 3D printers at home and they'll be, you know, printing their own apparel from designers. So that is really my vision. I think it will take a while for us to get there, but we know the current system is broken. It doesn't work for most women, the sizing, and then the way the industry operates on creating all of this clothing at mass also isn't working. Like, retail is shifting, right? So that's sort of my vision of where this all will go. And we're really happy to be one of the first pioneers to start it.
That's exciting. And, you know, as you're trying to get distribution, you know, what do the distribution channels look like for something like this as well? Because, you know, retail operates based off of shipping a large quantity to a, a distributor who ships it to a store. And this is kind of antithetical to that, right? It's individual quantities. There's no large quantities of anything other than material. And,
you know, we build direct relationships with our customers. So we're a direct-to-consumer brand. Our distribution is right now through our website. We've done a few kind of pop-up experiences. We've done a few trunk shows, but it's really all around this personalization. And if we have a middleman, like a retailer, it will be impossible for us to do that. So our business model is to have a direct relationship with the consumer and operate the business that way.
So, you know, you transitioned from a corporate career into the startup scene. And what were some of the biggest challenges of doing that, right? Aside from just having to take a huge risk. I think some people, it's just different when you have a large team that you're working with and the challenges are different and the, you know, excitement's different. So what were some of the things that have been tough and exciting for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with the exciting part because, you know, I think a lot of people sort of dream of being an entrepreneur and they're like, well, I wouldn't know how to start. And the truth is, like, you just start like you would any other project. You know, when you're in corporate life, someone will say, hey, I want you to do this report. Okay, great. How do I do that? What are the steps to get there? Who do I need to talk to? What does the format need to be? What tools do I need? You know, it's the same thing when you start a company. It's sort of, what are all the things that need to get done to launch this company? And you kind of project manage them and you tackle it one thing at a time and you solve one problem at a time. And that's exciting, right? I've always run businesses within businesses and had that experience. So to do it on my own, you know, with my own company was great. I think the things that have been challenging, you know, more for me personally was, you know, there is like a entrepreneurial loneliness, especially like at the beginning when I didn't really have a team I was partnering with. And it was sort of just an idea in my head and I hadn't really gotten anyone on board. And you're sort of like, oh gosh, what have I done? You know, day one after quitting your job, you're sort of like, oh, okay, it's just me, myself, and I. So I think that is, you know, that was scary, I guess. And, you know, I think, you know, there is like a financial impact, right? That a lot of entrepreneurs don't talk about. Like, we're bootstrapping, like, I'm not getting paid, right? I didn't come from a lot. So making money has always been something that, you know, I always wanted to be financially independent. And so that's been a little bit hard, you know, emotionally as well. You know, so I just think of it as more like, you know, building something and as a temporary thing. But I don't think a lot of, you know, entrepreneurs really talk about that. And I think the third thing is everyone told me this would happen, but not being able to really turn it off. I've always been a hard worker. I was always first one in, last one to leave. But this is at a different level where it's all I think about really all the time. I think that not having that mind space is also a challenge.
I can appreciate all of those options, but the financial component, you're right. It didn't really click until you mentioned it, but people avoid talking about the financial struggle initially. It's almost like you only hear about the success afterward, right? Where they're like, oh yeah, I saw a tweet where somebody said, I'm so glad I'm successful enough to be able to share my struggles now. And there was just this notion, and they were dead right, that it's hard to do
right
when you're in the middle of it. But if you're bootstrapping a company, yeah, you're just not taking a salary when you were used to getting a salary. That's stressful.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Which makes every minute even more important, right? Because you're just, you're even more driven, right?
Completely. That makes total sense. So I'd like to dig in a little bit. Like you mentioned, your website is different and then the app process is different. How has, I guess, since there are multiple steps in the ordering process, you know, where they can order the product, but then they also have to take the measurements. How do you make that process as easy as possible, keeping conversion rates strong, even though there's an extra, there's not only an extra step in fulfilling it, there's an extra step in purchasing it versus taking a standard size. And maybe it's an advantage.
We definitely have created friction in a pretty slick process that has been established by every retailer, right? You go to the store, you probably pick out two sizes because two of them will really fit you. You get them, one of them fits, you have a shipping label and you return it. It's pretty easy, although frustrating because you end up not getting the product you want. So we've really broken it down and do our best communicating this is that it really is three easy steps. So, you know, the first one is you choose your length. The second one is you take our fit quiz. And the third one is that after you check out, you take a few selfies. And what we've done is we do the third step kind of after you check out. You can do it in your own time. It doesn't have to happen right at that moment. You have to kind of be wearing like tight fitting clothing, and sometimes you're not. And we find, you know, most women do it right away, and some, you know, it'll take up a week or so, and that's okay. You know, our intention is to get it right. That's sort of been a trick to us. So really just kind of reiterating those three steps in as simple a way as possible over and over has sort of been, I think, the key to our success so far. And we're always looking at ways to make it easier and better and faster and all of those things too. So we're always refining based on what our customers are telling us.
Yeah, that makes sense. How many different garments do you have on your site? Four or five?
We have four. So our big thing is the black pant. It's the perfect fitting black pant. You know, Wired magazine just did a big review on it. That is sort of the piece that every woman needs. And then we also do a t-shirt, which we believe every woman needs a great fitting t-shirt. And then we have a layering jacket as well, which is sort of this elevated jacket that's also super cozy. So we really focus on wardrobe essentials, right? These are the pieces that every woman needs in her closet that fit her great and are also super comfortable. And she can kind of wear them out and about on a daily basis. That's kind of where our core focus is.
The idea of product development, right? As you're kind of expanding into other categories, is it something that you guys think you'll probably scale vertically? Like, hey, we just need to tell as many women as possible about this. Or is a big part of the strategy to own more of the wardrobe or you know, have more hanger space or something like that?
Yeah, we see ourselves as a piece of the story. The great thing about black pants is you can style them in so many different ways. We're not a traditional fashion brand that's going to come out with a line twice a year of, you know, 100 items and then, you know, get rid of all that old inventory and bring new stuff in. You know, these are kind of those timeless classic pieces that every woman needs in her closet that quickly become your favorites. So it's like the best of. So right now we're doing the best black pant and the best tee. And we will evolve that by coming out with kind of the best products that every woman needs. And it's both, right? Like we're acquiring new customers every day. And we're also working on some new items that women are asking for. It's a little bit of both, but I don't see the collection being this broad, sweeping, high trend that comes in and out. And, you know, it will stay and be these pieces that stay in your closet.
That's a really cool angle. I don't know if I would say addicted to power laws, but I like power laws. And so you want to be the 20% or maybe even the 10% in the wardrobe that is used 80% or 90% of the time.
Exactly. In fact, I think one of our name shortlists for the company was Pareto or something at one point because of that. So yes, the 80-20 rule.
Oh my goodness. Melting my little data analysis heart. So I think that the, you know, just that notion of making somebody really experience what a good fit is, how have the women that you approached feel about it? You know, because, and I see that you use a variety of models on your site, really representative of the population a lot more than maybe what you see at some of the big box retailers. So yeah, how are women responding, and what have they felt about the whole even way you showcase the product?
The biggest response, the one word I will say is sort of finally, you know, finally is the word that we keep hearing, sort of kind of what you were saying. Why has nobody done this? Well, nobody's done it because it's really hard and the industry isn't set up this way. But I think it's sort of finally someone is solving this problem and getting rid of sizes, because sizes just suck, you know, on so many levels. They don't fit us well. They have a deep emotional pull for us. You know, there's so many things about sizes that are not great for women. They just universally don't work. And, you know, we have some women, you know, like me, for example, I have to size up to get over my hips, and then I have a big gap in the back of the waist and things are always too short, you know? So I just have a couple tweaks here and there. And then we have some other customers who call us and they say, you know, I've been getting custom made clothing my whole life. I'm so happy someone has solved this and made it easier for me. You know, when are you going to come out with more items so I can fill my closet? It really does kind of vary the gamut. But I think what we're learning is that this is a real problem for most women. And we're really excited about the feedback that we've gotten and the photos that we've gotten and the reviews we've gotten. And, you know, we're building a brand for all women, and we're doing everything we can to showcase those women in all of our marketing. You know, most of the people on our website are actually my friends. It's a brand for real women. So that's where we're headed.
So you've got famous friends now.
I do, actually. Yeah, we got it. It's funny. We got a hit on Women's Wear Daily. They wrote a story on us, you know, which is the premier kind of industry fashion magazine. And my friend, her photo was on there. And, you know, she's she actually works in the, you know, the medical industry. So that was kind of fun for her.
I guess there's a lot of famous doctors, but not famous for fashion doctors.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Not famous for their black pants.
E-commerce is changing in a lot of ways. And I think we've talked a lot about the apparel industry, and you just make it sound so simple. And it is, when you think about it, that getting tailored garments is not new, but tailoring at scale is brand new. So then shifting away from the product itself, what kinds of things have you been seeing in the e-commerce industry that is probably going to develop, or you think is going to develop in a different way? And this could be anything from the method to acquire customers, right? You know, peak ad load on Facebook, to even just the technology to process a transaction. So what kind of e-commerce trends are you seeing?
I think customization is a really big deal, and it's very hard to do at scale. I mean, I'm seeing customized hair care. There's customized vitamin subscriptions. There's customized, you know, Tesla does customized cars. So I think this idea of customization is actually really becoming a thing now, especially with the upcoming generation who really doesn't want to be put into a standard box. In fact, when we talk to millennials about what we're doing, they're like, oh, of course you got rid of sizes. Why do those even exist? You know, where women my age, 40 up, are like, oh God, sizes. I'm so stressed out about my size and what number I am. So it's really refreshing. And I think that that generation upcoming will not tolerate anything that's standard. So I do believe customization and people who can crack that at scale will win, for sure. And it's not just personalized recommendations, it's actual customization, whatever that means for the brand. I think second, I believe that authentic brands will win. This has to do with your question about digital marketing, in the sense it is almost so overwhelming right now. For our customer in particular, we're finding that she's trying to spend less time on social media and less time online, less time on her phone, making it harder to reach her in maybe a way that a direct-to-consumer brand would have 5 years ago. I don't want to say analog, but I almost feel like going back to some of these traditional offline marketing channels will start seeing emerge a little bit. First, it was digital ads, and then it was social media ads, and then it was social media influencers. Those seem all maxed out to me. And that's partially why at Red Thread, we're actually building really authentic communities of women more in an offline space. You know, like I hosted an event at my home on Monday night that was a fundraiser for my kids' school. The third trend, and I know this is not a new thing, but it's really around speed. And I mean, speed of your website, speed of your delivery, how fast your payment goes through, like all of those things are just kind of table stakes right now. Amazon has set the standard there, right? And there's no reason why Red Thread should be any slower than Amazon just because it's custom made. Maybe you get like a day or two more. Speed, you know, getting everything yesterday is incredibly important. So I think new distribution models that are in, you know, even just in the restaurant world, you're seeing all these like delivery within 10 minute type things. So I think speed will continue to be a trend, and that people who can do things quickly will win as well.
You bring up a lot of great points. And it really seems like the one that stuck out to me the most is that notion of authentic connection, right? Where I think that channels just have to change when there becomes so much noise. And we're just looking for ways to like figure out what's signal and what's noise. And so that a friend who tells me about something is usually going to be signal. All the ads I see while I'm reading, and I mean, I buy plenty of ads, so I'm not against ads whatsoever, but the click-through rates are way lower than, and the conversion rate than personal recommendation I get from a friend or meeting somebody and deciding to buy that way. It'll be interesting to see what scalable methods can still have a large distribution or large enough distribution, but get through all of the noise that pops up and be a signal company. It seems like interests or niches are what really breaks through right now. Like, oh, this is just perfect for me. This is the one thing for me. There's so many other options, but this works for me. Well, the last question I always like to ask is, you know, do you have any book or resource that it started off as a one-off read, but you refer back to it frequently? I like to think of it like a book or article or white paper that you've read more than three times that it just became more of a reference.
I'm a total nerd. I read a lot. I read about a book a week. I actually read business books about startups and entrepreneurs and their vision, ranging from, you know, the Zappos story to the Phil Knight story to Amazon story, you know, all of those kind of business books that you get to read the full journey from the entrepreneur. You know, I know there's like a lot of anti-Amazon sentiment, but I will say what I love about the book, The Everything Store, is when Jeff Bezos started that company in the 90s, he had a very clear vision of building a store where people would buy everything. Now, it took 25 years to get there, but I just love the vision and the persistence and not wavering from that vision. And, you know, we have a vision as well, right? Where the apparel world doesn't have sizes, everyone has their measurements on their digital wallet, everything's made on demand, and there's zero waste, right? That's our vision. And I believe that vision will happen. I just love that crispness and that focus of that vision because he and the team made it a reality. There's something about that that is really powerful. So that's kind of the one that I always think back to, especially, you know, on the tougher days of just having that vision and sticking with it and going for it.
Exciting stuff. Yeah. Well, we'll put a link to the book in the show notes. I actually haven't read it. One of my big things with the podcast was finding out how to compete in the age of Amazon. And I really should read the book so I can hear a little bit more about their origins. I feel like I get myopically focused on today rather than kind of how they got here.
Yeah, I mean, they had a journey as well, right? It started in his garage, you know, and there's some funny early pictures of, you know, signs that say Amazon that are just written on the wall, you know? So every company starts somewhere, right?
Absolutely. Megan, best of luck with the journey at Red Thread. Sounds like just a cool vision and it's really resonating. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. If you love the show, leave a review on iTunes. See you next time.